talking about minhagim as it relates to business and halacha, and how minhag could really establish what the halacha will be in the absence of a shtar, in the absence of any agreement, in the absence of any type of dina d'malchus adina. So that was last week's topic about industry practice. Whatever the practice might be, we spoke about some examples of a broker who may have showed someone a house or an apartment, and then a couple years later someone else showed the same apartment. You know, who has the rights to get the broker's fee? So it all depends on the industry practice. Now, one of the questions that came up last week was, how do you define an industry practice? Does it go based on the Jews? Does it go based on the non-Jews? Does it go based on communities? So we'll just start off with Rav Moshe here, and then we'll go through some interesting case studies. Let me just put up on the screen for those online. Give me one second here. Here we go. So if you take a look at number one here, Rav Moshe, I'm going to just run through some. I'm not going to read through everything inside. Rav Moshe writes right in the beginning, it's obvious shekol eilu hadinim hatulim b'minag hamedina. It's understandable, it's obvious, that every din that depends on the minag medina, as we learned in the Mishnah Bava Metzia last week, that whatever the practice is of, you know, whether you have to feed your employees or how much they have to work, all of that, he says, if you go three lines down, right? These halachas don't depend on the chachamim. V'gam af lo al pi Yehudim, dafka. Not even on the Jews. The Jews are not the ones who are establishing what the industry practice is. V'af shehinhigu ze'anachim. Even if the non-Jews are having this industry practice, we'll go through some examples today. Kigon shem rov toshi ha'ir. Let's say most of the cities are made up of non-Jews. Sanami hu midin ha'torah. That's a midin ha'torah. That if that's how the non-Jews are practicing, that becomes the minhag. That becomes the halacha. If, you know, we're going to discuss, handshakes and things of that sort, or what defines a final acquisition, what's a final agreement, if the non-Jews are doing this, and that's most of the people living in the city and the community, that will decide the halacha. Umistama kefi minag, that seems to establish what the practice is. Da'adaita de minag ha'ir, nechshav kehisnu bestama. If you and I make a stipulation, we say that it's going to be this way, it's going to be that way, the agreement's going to last for 6 months, it's going to last for 12 months, so if we don't make any agreement, so then the default is that whatever the minhag, the industry is. My understanding was, and your understanding was, that whatever the industry practices. So that's what it means, a minhag of Medina. Not based on how Jews do business, but based on the rove of the people in the city. It could be Jews, it could be non-Jews, but they're the ones who establish what exactly is going to be the industry practice. So let's start off with some interesting cases now, just to open up the conversation a little bit, and then go through the halacha, how we would pass in each of these cases. So one case is an interesting situation. It could happen, Muncie, any place, Brooklyn, I'm sure, also, where there's a Jewish bus driver. Listen to the following case. The individual sent in, I'm a school bus driver in a large Jewish community. And the other bus drivers are planning a walkout as a push for higher wages and better benefits. Now this individual, this Jewish bus driver, says, I'm not interested. Do I have to play along? Do I have to go along with everybody else? You know, it's a union. Does he have to go along with the strike? He said, I'm happy with my wages. I'm happy with my benefits. I don't like to cause fights. I don't like strikes. I don't like any of this stuff. But everybody else is doing it. Is he bound to the union, that strike? That's question one. Question two. This is very common. Not very, very common, but it could come up. A person shops online. He buys from a Jewish website. Okay, we have some people involved in Jewish websites here, and the person, he likes a shirt, he likes a tie, and he says, "Okay, I'm going to buy." He presses the button. He's making the purchase, and then an hour later, he says, "I really did not want to make that purchase. It looks so nice." And he says, "I got so many shirts, I've got so many ties, I don't need this." And then he wants to go back. Now, the Jewish website, the owner says, listen, you press the button, the sale is final, it was very clear, and there's no going back on it. Can he go back? If he wanted, he probably could dispute, go to the credit card company, you have Amex, say, Amex, I don't want to pay, they're not letting me make the return, so maybe Amex will deal with the dispute. As a Jewish consumer, can you back out once you've pressed that button?
Customer will lose.
Yeah. Well, so it could be the customer will lose.
All the credit card companies, they just look at the website and it says,
Okay, so either way, maybe they'll lose. But let's say they won't lose. Let's say they won't lose, whatever the case might be. Can the Jewish consumer back out? He pressed the button. Is that considered a final sale? By simply pressing the button. Another case to think of. And we're going to go through all these through the Marmokomos. Individual, this is very common. Certainly those who are employers. I run a company with mainly frum workers. I notice many of them spend quite a while on coffee breaks. They already take off time for lunch break that their contract allows. Do I have to allow these additional breaks? How many breaks can an employee actually take? So what's the rule there? It wasn't specified, unless the contract says no breaks other than your lunch break. But you're allowed to take a lunch break. That implies that other breaks maybe are not allowed, but everybody. You know, when I worked for the short period of time in PricewaterhouseCoopers, there are plenty of breaks along the way, other than lunch breaks, whether it's a mincha break or whether a person was just hanging out by the water cooler and talking to the co-workers. How many breaks are really, can we tolerate? Smoke breaks, okay. So, yeah. And then one final question, we'll go through the sources, is there's a certain school that has a constant stream of suppliers for things like office supplies. And a colleague of mine was surprised that we always pay our vendors in full and on time, claiming I was one in a million. So I'm sure many vendors will tell you that they don't get paid right away. But he was shocked that this particular company paid right on time. So he said, maybe you should just wait a couple weeks to pay. Everyone else waits a couple weeks. Wait a couple weeks, this way you don't have to give the cash right away. It seems to be the industry practice. Everyone else does it that way. Is that something that's acceptable as an industry practice, that you could delay the payment of whatever you need to pay? So these are the four questions. We're going to go through the sources. We're going to come back and talk about each case study, and we'll give the answers to this. So let's go take a look at number two. We're first going to address the question of the pressing the button on the website to buy the shirt. Is that a final sale? So take a look at number two inside here. Gemara Bo Tzio Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Alpha. Gemara says, Amar a puppy mishmei
derava. Why wouldn't it be a final sale?
Why would it?
Why wouldn't it be? I mean, it says purchase, final sale. It has the note.
Because in halacha, we only have a kinyan such as a hagbah, lifting something up. We have mashicha, you draw something. Mesira, pulling something. We don't have any sale that says pushing a button on the website. So the question is, in halacha, how do we address that? Is that acceptable or not acceptable?
Meaning we don't view that now, pushing the button, as some sort of
grammar. Correct. So that's what we're going to discuss. Whether or not there's something that are... Every kinyan that I just mentioned, hagbah, and mashicha, and mesira, there's a basis in the Torah. There's no basis for pushing a button on the website. So let's see, maybe there is. So that's what we're going to discuss. So take a look at the Gemara number two here, Baba Metzia Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, Amar Apapi Mishmei Derava. Hai Situmta Kanya. A Situmta is a final sale. What in the world is a Situmta? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says Situmta, number three, is Chosem Shiroshman HaChanvanim Al HaChavi Al Shayayim. Let's say you go to a wine store. You want to buy a big case of wine. So you don't pay the money yet. You don't pick up the wine. You just say, I want to buy that nice, fancy case of wine. Okay, Levin. We'll write your name Levin. It's all yours. They write it down. So Rashi says, that's an example of Chosem Shiroshmim HaChanvanim Al Chavi Yos Shayayin. They write the signature on the barrels or bottles of wine. Shilokin Harbe Biacha. They buy a batch together. And they place it in the storage house. And they kind of send them to each store to sell. Everything has a sign, like Levin, whatever your name is, Weinberg. So then, that's it. It's yours. But there's no kinyan there. I didn't pick it up. I called in an order. I didn't say, I didn't pay money yet. I just said, I want that. But that's a situmta. Situmta is, if you just take a look at the continuation of the Gemara, and we'll go back inside Rashi to put this all together. The Gemara says, Lai Hilchasa, what does it mean, a situmta? What does that mean that my name Levin was signed on this box of wine? Lamai Hilchasa, what's the relevance? So the Gemara says, Rav Chaviva Amar Limekan Yemamish. It's a final opinion. The acquisition is final. When you write my name on I'm buying those shirts, I'm buying that bottle of wine, that's final. And the Gemara says, Rabbanan say, Likibule ala Mishapara. It means a person is being makabal mishapar. What's mishapar? Mishapar is, let's say, In halacha, paying money for an object is not a final sale unless I take the object. So let's say I go to the store, I want to buy some food. I pay the money, and then you know what? I say, actually, I don't want it. Give me the money back. But I pay the money first. So the Gemara says you could actually go back in the sale, but you're subject to Misha Para. Misha Para is a statement in the Mishnah that one who doesn't keep his word is going to be punished from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Misha Para, B'dor HaMabul, and Dor HaFlaga, Hashem who punished Dor HaMabul. And punished Dor HaFlaga, he's going to punish a person who doesn't hold to keep his word. So you're allowed to go back halachically, but it's a very dangerous curse you're getting involved with. So the din is, it's not a final acquisition according to Rabbanan, but you are subject to Misha Para, which means, if you sign, I want the bottle of wine, and they write my name Levin, and I say, I don't want it. So one opinion says you can't go back, the sale's final. And the other opinion says you can go back, but you're still going to get Misha Para. So how do we paskin? So the Gemara said, Hilchas, the bottom line is, Lekabule alea Misha Para, which means you can go back on the sale, but you're going to be subject to the curse of Misha Para. But the Gemara then says, Uba Asra Denagi, a place that has a practice, Limikne Mamish, that a sale is final with a Situmta, it's cutting. There's no going back. The minhag amakom establishes. So if you live in a place where when you call in the order and then you write your name, Levin, on that bottle or that box of wine, and everyone in the industry understands it's a final sale, it's a final sale, you can't go back. Now, if you don't live in such an area, so then you're only subject to the Misha Para. You could go back, but you have to deal with whatever Misha Para means.
He wrote his name. You didn't sign your name. You signed, that's different.
I told him I want to buy it, and there's understood in our community, in this industry, when I say I want to buy it and he signs my name on it, that's a final sale.
No, but I'm saying it's not you signing a contract.
Correct.
That
so now, right. It's, again, not a contract here at all. So now, yeah.
This is a Misha Para, a pretty serious thing too, right? It sounds like my client says whether it's a Bilal Mahash, whether it's a Mahash, or if it's a Bilal Mahash, that you know, you have bigger problems
and you can deal with the Misha Para. Is that Nafkamina? The Nafkamina is whether it's a kin or not a kin. That's Nafkamina. You're just trying to be magdir a little bit. Is it a Bein Adam L'Chavero or a Bein Adam L'Makom? Just because the Misha... Yeah, in a Hanami, but even though it's Misha Para, it could be Misha Para because I violated my Bein Adam L'Chavero. I mean, both Stalim is Bein Adam L'Chavero. The question really is whether this creates something in Chosh Mishpat, or no, it doesn't create anything in Chosh Mishpat, but still I'm a person who's not believable. I've lost trust. So I don't know if it has to be touched that way, but either way, this is the Machlokas. So now, how does this relate to us? How does this relate to the website where I press, purchase, buy, whatever the Lashon is? So the answer is that it's pretty common practice that when a person presses the button, I want to buy, the sale is final. And since that's the accepted practice, no matter whether you're buying from Twillery or whatever other company online you're buying, that would seem to be a final sale, and a person should not be able to go back on this sale. And that's final. Yeah, Yaakov.
If, let's say this is like at the wine store, let's say they're okay with you calling in and canceling your order. Okay, we'll cross off your name. You still have the Misha Para issue, or if they're... Okay, it's fine.
Yeah, so I don't know this so well, but I believe if they're okay, I mean, if they said it like, okay, fine, we don't want to deal with the customer. But if they said, listen, we're completely fine, we're mocha b'davar, and my understanding, it probably would be entirely okay. And
so when it doesn't, let's say on our website, but many others also, when it doesn't say final sale, and for example, on our website, it'll say free shipping, free returns, meaning you can change your mind and send the thing back and we'll refund your money, we're actually happy if they say... I changed your mind and I sent an email before I ship it, before I have to put
right.
it in the warehouse. But when it says final sale, it has, it's very clearly defined on what the final lashon is that you see.
Right. Yeah. But now I should be clear. If it's clear in the contract, when you press the button and there's a words final sale, no returns, that's not even what we're talking about. That's pasha. It's a situation whereby it doesn't state that. And it just says, you want to buy it. And then you want to go back on it, that's where is that a final sale? It's not a final sale. But if it says that, you're in essence signing a contract. Okay, now let's move on to the case of the most common situations, the workers who are taking all of these breaks. Okay, people take breaks, maybe too many breaks. How many breaks should we take? So we need to do a little bit of a background. We've been discussing a lot about minhagim. Minhagim in general, in the context of Choshe Mishpat and business halacha, but minhagim is a topic I like to talk about in general. How powerful minhagim are. So one example of just seeing the strength of minhag is a Gemara in Brachos that asks the question, what bracha do you say when you drink water? Before you drink water, what bracha do you say? And we all know the answer is Shehakol Nia B'Devarav. But there is an opinion of Rabbi Tarfon in the Mishnah who says, you say, as a bracha rishona, Borei Nefashos, Rebos V'chasonan V'chu. That's a very strange opinion to say that. We know because we don't pasken that way. The Gemara says, how do you pasken? My Hilchasa. The Gemara says, you know what? We don't know. Poke Chazi, go out and see my Amadavar. Go see what people are doing. And whatever they're doing, that's the halacha. It didn't try to figure out which one's right. Whatever the minhag olav is. And there are many, many examples throughout Shas and halacha, whatever the minhag is. You know, we discussed last week that women don't shecht, even though they're allowed to shecht, but the minhag is that women don't shecht. So minhagim come up all over. The Ramah dedicated the entire Ramah on the Shulchan Aruch. I must have mentioned this in the past, the Maisa with the Ramah, but he dedicated his life because he once abolished a minhag in his community. A terrible thing happened, and he realized he made a mistake. You can never abolish a minhag. So minhagim are very, very powerful. But what happens when a minhag goes up against a halacha? It's a stira. It contradicts a halacha that exists. So there's a Yushalmi that says in two places, the phrase, we look inside number four, the Yushalmi says in Bamitziah and also Yevamos, I'll bring the one in Yevamos in just a moment, Amar of Hoshaya, Zos Omeris HaMinag Mivatel HaHalacha. If there's a halacha, and the minag says otherwise, the minag actually nullifies the halacha, it overrides the halacha. Now this is talking about in the context about if you made an agreement to have your workers wake up really, really early, and to come really, really late. Let's stay really, really late. The Yushalmi says you have no right to do that because the minhag is that workers work 9 to 5, let's say, whatever the times are. For you to expect them to wake up, to come at 7, to stay till 7 at night, that's against the minhag, even though you made an agreement. The Yushalmi says the minhag in our community overrides whatever the halacha is. Minhag is mevato halacha. That's one case the Yushalmi says. Another case is there's a Gemara in Yevamos that let's say Eliyahu Navi comes along. Take a look at number 6 here. Yushalmi Nivamos. Rabbi Ba Rav Yehuda B'Shem Rav Im Yavo Eliyahu V'Yomar Shecholtzin B'Minal Shomelam Chalitza. Right? There's Yibam Chalitza. If a husband dies and leaves behind a widow without any children, so the brother of the deceased, the brother-in-law, performs either Yibam or Chalitza. Yibum, they get married. Chalitza, they end it, take off the shoe, and they spit. So now, what type of shoe can you use for chalitza? So there's a description in the Mishnayos which types of shoes qualify. So there's a minol. A minol is usually a closed shoe, and a sandal is an open shoe. Can you use these or not? So the Gemara says, number 6, Im yavo Eliyahu v'yomar shecholtzin b'minal, shomin lo. If Eliyahu says, he comes and tells us, that he reveals to us you could use a minol, we listen to him. However, if he says she'ein cholzin besanta, you can't use some type of sandal, an open shoe. That doesn't work for chalitza. Ein shamulo. Here, Eliyahu says we can't use it. We don't listen to him. We do use a sandal against Eliyahu. Eliyahu Navi, it doesn't get more clear than Eliyahu Navi. There's no greater connection to Shemayim than Eliyahu Navi. He comes into the world often, and people are zocha to see him, and we don't listen to him. Why? Sharei harabim nogu lachlotz b'sandal. The custom is to use a sandal, and therefore haminag mevatel halacha. Eliyahu could say, I was up in Shemayim. We have stories of Eliyahu coming from Shemayim. I'll tell you one quickly, the Gemara in Gittin, daf vav amud beis. There's a machlokes, what happened with the story of Pilegish Begiva. Pilegish Begiva, Rabbi Yonas and Rabbi Avyasa had a machlokes. One of them said that the husband, whatever you call the husband of a Pilegish, but we'll call him a husband, was very disgusted by the Pilegish and sent her off because he saw a hair on her. And the other opinion says that he saw a bug on her. So one time, Rabbi Yasser was Zoche, the Gemara says all this, to see Eliyahu HaNavi. So he asks Eliyahu HaNavi, what's HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing right now? He says he's actually learning, and he's learning the sugya of Pilegish Begiva. So Rabbi Yasser got all giddy, and he's like, whoa, I had a machlokus with my buddy Rabbi Yonasan. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say happened? Tell me the maisa. Who's right? Am I right or is he right? So Eliyahu says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, B'ni Avyasser, Avyasser B'ni, says this is what happened. And Yonasan B'ni says this is what happened. So he says, I don't understand. There could be a suffix in Shemayim. What happened? He says, no, they both happened. Eluv, Eluv, Dibel, Kamchayim. First he saw a bug and wasn't so bothered, then saw a hair and he got bothered and threw her out. But either way, Eliyahu is a direct connection to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying. So the halacha is that a sandal can't be used because he heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We say it doesn't make a difference. Our minug is to use a sandal. And that overrides it's mevata halacha. So now the question becomes, so how does that relate to other areas of halacha? So there's another example they bring. There's a halacha, if you buy a treif animal, you don't know it's treif. You think it's a cow. Turns out there was a punctured lung. Now you had no idea. You don't know until you shecht it and open it up. So according to the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, it's number 7, I'll read it inside, but those who want to see it is number 7. According to the letter of the law, the din is that it's a mekach tos. The sale is void, and you can return the animal that's treif. I bought an animal to eat, not to be a treif. And even though nobody knew about it, you could return the animal. But the Pisrei Tshuva, number 8, clearly says that the minog is not that way, that the sale is final. Ah, the halacha says it's a mekach tos. I bought a kosher animal, you're selling me a treif animal. Doesn't make a difference. The industry practice says we override the halacha. The minog is to override the halacha. Another example. Number 9. Take a look at this number 9. Shulchan Aruch says, Muzhar, this is very, very important for all of us workers. Muzhar ha-poel shelo yivatel ma'atkan matkan. A worker, a poel, cannot, he must be warned not to be mevatel a little bit here, take a little bit of time over here. Elachayv ledakdek al atzmo bizman, he must be so precise in his keeping of time. Sharei hikbidu al bracha revi shabirchas amazon shelo yivarchos. There's halacha in Shulchan Aruch that if you're benching, you cut out the fourth bracha of Tova Meitiv. Why? I'm being paid for every hour, every minute. So for me to take an extra 2 minutes of saying the bracha of Tova Meitiv, that's wrong. So they do away with the bracha of Revi'is, the fourth bracha of benching, and go back to work. V'chein chayiv la'avod b'chol kocha. A person also has to work with all his energy, all his strength. Sherei Yaakov HaTzadik Amar. Yaakov is going to be born in this week's Parsha. Yaakov HaTzadik says, with all my strength, I served your father. Yaakov is zochet eschar even in this world. So this is the Shulchan Aruch, the halacha. How careful we must be with time, with energy, with effort. When you're working, you know, when I'm giving a class now in Tzai Sims, in the YU Business School. It's a class in workplace halacha. And these guys are yeshiva guys. And we're talking about the different challenges that they're going to face in the workforce. And I explain to them, you guys are learning now, but when you go to work, you can't just take off time to go work in the base medrash. You'll go learn the... When I worked in PwC, I worked across from the Midtown Chabad. So yeah, I'd go for mincha. My lunch break would be mincha and learn in the Chabad. But if you're taking more than your lunch break, if you're going to chapa 20 minutes here for a shir to learn a Mitzvah Yisharim or a Mishnayos, that's wrong. You're being paid per hour. You have to... Yaakov Avinu spent 14 years learning Shem Ve'Ever. And then when he worked for his father, he worked... He was medakdek every single moment. Now, there's a certain level you have to... You know, it's hard for a guy in yeshiva to do that, to accept that. And you have to explain to him what they're working is not a b'di'evet, when they're working is a very l'chadchila, and they're bringing, you know, a god into this world. But either way, you have to be so careful with your time. So one would imagine it would be unacceptable then to take extra breaks outside the lunch break. So take a look at number 10. Shulchan Aruch writes, this is talking about davening. Is a person allowed to daven if he's working? Can you take a mincha break? Are you allowed to? I'm being paid 8-hour days. Can I take a mincha break? Mechaber writes in number 10 here, V'mnosei lem schar mispalen havinenu. You have to have an abridged Shmoneh Esrei. Havinenu is a short Shmoneh Esrei. You can't do a full 18-19 brachas Shmoneh Esrei. The ha'inna nowadays says the Shulchan Aruch ain derech hakbid b'kach. The employer is not to makbid when the guy goes to daven. They understand the breaks. Umistama adaita dehachi maskir nosam shis palu Shmoneh Esrei. It's understood when you hire the guy, you take breaks for Shmoneh Esrei, for davening, a smoke break, a lunch break, a coffee break. Ramarai, the Gra adds number 11. Techol ha'maskir adaita deminhoga. When you hire someone, it's all on the premise that whatever the industry practice is. So now we can go back to our case here. The halacha is you have to be medaktik in every single second you work. But the minhag is that people take plenty of breaks. So the question is, what is considered industry practice? Now it's very hard to know. I don't know if people have taken surveys, what's acceptable, but it has to be within reason. So the answer is, Yes, coffee breaks are allowed. Yes, water cooler conversations are allowed. Again, it's been 15 years since I was really working, but I'm told now more so than ever how important, well, I guess before COVID, networking was so important, and the schmoozing was very, that was, they wanted people in different companies to work in the same floor so they could network with each other. That was part of creating business. So probably now more than ever, or again, now I mean before Corona, it was more than ever the importance of conversations and building businesses and building networking, whatever is considered acceptable. But to go beyond what's acceptable, that's already wrong. So even though the halacha is you must be midaktik, the minog, the industry practice, is mevata the halacha. How you define a minog, I can't tell you. We don't know. It's hard to really be magdir to define exactly, but it has to be reasonable. You have to use some common sense. Don't be a chazer about taking advantage of the breaks, but it has to be somewhat in the realm of normalcy and that which is accepted. Yeah.
Still, if you're hired and they specifically give you these little, you get a 15-minute break here, lunch is 40 minutes, whatever, that will override minhagim.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. If you're so clear in the beginning, with contracts, with verbal agreements, then Dina d'Malchusot, this is in the absence of any of those. Now, if your demands might be unreasonable, so then maybe what to talk about. But for the most part, anything that's set up front should be binding.
If they say to you, I need this done, I don't care what you do. Suppose this is done, go have breaks all day long. As long as my work gets done, it's also understanding of.
Exactly. That would be, I think, understandable. I think, what I'm being told at least, most people nowadays, companies don't care about the hours you put in, they care about the quality and the results. What? Right, exactly. That's my understanding, but again, I have very little exposure these days to it.
The biggest problem is the phone and breaks.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Emailing on your time.
Yeah.
Where people are running their own live businesses sometimes on your time.
Yeah, exactly, for sure. Yeah. That has to be spoken about with with the employer. You have to have the understanding. And that's one of the big questions we talk about in this business class with the students there. At what point should you divulge that you're leaving early? So if you're in New York, everyone knows if you're walking with the yarmulke to the interview, it's pretty understood. Unless the guy lives in Mars, he knows that you're probably going to leave early. Now, maybe he doesn't know the details. So we talk about what point you should really mention it. It's not advisable to your first interview to mention it because you're probably not going to get the job. Somewhere down the middle, when maybe the second interview, you also don't want to surprise them the first Friday, by the way, I'm out of here. It has to be an honest conversation. They suggest if it's a very small company and you're one of five employees, then you probably should be very upfront towards the beginning because your presence is much more significant. If you're working in a place of 600 employees, so you're leaving early may not have that much of an impact, so you could delay, but it has to be an open conversation where there's honesty. But you have to be upfront with them, that's for sure. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, it certainly should not be that way. But it should. Everything should be up front, for sure. Right. Yeah. That becomes a big challenge. Right. Yeah, this is a little off topic, but just to address this point for a second, when you're working with Yarmulke, with someone else is working, and your standards are different than someone else's, when I worked, so I took off Tisha B'Av. They asked me, well, there's another guy who has a Yarmulke, he doesn't take off Tisha B'Av, why are you taking off? So it does get challenging sometimes. Right. Okay, let's move on to the final question. Actually, I have two more questions to deal with. Maybe we'll go back to the bus strike. But let's talk about the guy paying on time. Remember, we had the suppliers. And they found out that this school paid on time to the vendors. They paid for the pencils and the paper, everything on time. And the guy's like, who does that? No one pays on time. So is that something that's acceptable? The minog is, the industry practice is, no one pays on time. Maybe you should say minog is mevatel halacha. So take a look at number 12 now. The mission of Bava Basra, the first mission of Maseches Bava Basra. It's talking about a different topic. That let's say you have a property next to your neighbor's property. And there's a hezek ria. I could see into his property. He can see to my property. We say, you know what? Let's build a wall. Build a wall to protect our, privacy. So what type of wall? One guy wants to build, made a brick. The guy makes it out of steel. The other guy out of straw. How do you go? What type of mechitza do you build? So Mishnah says there, number 12, Hashutvin sheratzu la'asos mechitza b'chatzar. partners decide to split their field up, create privacy, build a mechitza. Bonin es hakosa be'emza, you build it in the middle of the property. Makum shenagu livnos gvil, gazis kfisin levinim, these are different sized bricks. Hakol kiminag medina. You could build the wall, whatever the minhag is. If you live in an area, I don't know, like Kew Gardens Hills, moved over to a lot of bricks now, before, you know, when after I moved there, whatever brick style they use, that's the bricks you should build. If you live in a different area where they use smaller bricks, wider bricks, whatever the minhag medina is, that's the size of wall you should build. The Gemara goes on to say, hakol, whenever there's a word hakol, kiminag medina, like a rule, whatever there's this, it comes to include. So the Mishnah says that it also includes hutzav adafa. Hutzav adafa is like wood and sticks, a very thin wall. Even that's allowed as well. So bricks, wide bricks, smaller bricks, and even sticks. So now let's say they want to build, the practice is to use straw. Straw doesn't really hold up, not very durable, but that's where they live, they build straw as their walls. So the Gemara doesn't mention that. It talks about bricks, it talks about sticks, not straw. So look at number 13, the last two lines of the Tosos here. Tosos writes, reading just the bold. You're only allowed to go as low, as weak, as loose, as sticks. Aval pachos mikan, something that's less durable than hutzav adafna. Pachos mikan afilu nagu minag hedyotu. Even if that's the practice in your city to build such a strange wall, it's a minag, it's a hedyotu, that's a useless, insignificant minag. It's a hedyot, could be like an idiot is one way to define the word hedyot. It's not a minag. We learn from here, the yesh minhagim, there are certain practices, she'ein lismoch alem. You cannot rely on certain minhagim, afil heicha detnan hakol kiminag medina. Not every industry practice makes sense. Because every single person in this practice doesn't pay on time, that means I should pay on time. Because every single person, lends on ribbis, I should collect ribbis. Because everyone eats treif, I should eat treif. So certainly, when the minhag goes against halacha, that's not called a minhag. That's a minhag that's garua. That's weak, doesn't hold any water. And so the example here, this is not an isser, but to make a wall out of straw, that makes no sense. It's really a silly type of minhag. That we don't accept. So when it comes to the employers paying on time, I don't need to tell you the importance it is of paying your employees or your vendors on time. There's a din. It's a whole other discussion, paying people on time. So you have to pay on time. Nobody else pays on time? Well, that's not acceptable. And therefore, a person, we would not say the minhag is mevata halacha in this case. You should continue to paskin like the halacha. The Chazon Ish explains a little bit where the lamdas is. We don't need to get involved in this, but the minhag only works if it doesn't go against the halacha. You had a question?
Yeah, but it said before that the minhag does mevata halacha by Eliyahu HaNavi. So when is the minhag mevata halacha and when it's not mevata halacha?
So there are two things you have to weigh. Number one is, how strong the minhag is. Does the minhag make sense? Using a sandal makes sense, let's say. And also, what's the risk involved? So let's say the minhag is to not pay on time, or you're violating an issur. So you have to weigh both the strength of the minhag and the risk of what it could ruin.
If your vendors, I mean, most of the vendors that we deal with have net 30, net 60, or whatever, but if your vendors understand that this is what everybody does, and you're most likely going to the same way, let's say, and then you're saying you're still over the Isra?
So we have to get, I'm not that familiar yet, hopefully we'll get to this, I'm not sure what point in the program this is, but paying on time, not every worker needs to be paid on time. A day worker needs to, a person who gets paid bi-weekly, bi-monthly, they don't get paid on time. There's a certain understanding involved. So I don't know enough about this, this din, so let's just leave, it's an example, but I can't answer this question right now. Yeah. Exactly. So I don't know how he passed in each case, but in a situation where you're supposed to pay the worker on time or the vendor on time, then we would not say the industry practice will override the halachas. So again, I don't know when we say you should pay on time when you push off, but yeah.
Let's say the bill says 30 days.
Right.
Could we say that's a contract? Okay, 30 days, that is acceptable. Even there, how? I think that's what
yeah.
you meant.
Right? Yeah, no, but the thing
it
is,
says 30 days.
When it says net 30, if we have the cash flow available, we'll pay it right away.
Right.
If
I'm saying,
There are some vendors that I pay on the second to last day before it says that the bill is due. Because the bill is due.
And that 30 is a contract.
I would think it would be okay, but I can't answer because I don't know that yet. I probably would be, but I just, unfortunately, I wish I did, but so I'm learning these tickets along with you guys.
This week you got to pay everybody right away.
Right. Good. Yeah. Assuming that would be allowed as well. As long as it's in contract, I would think it should be okay. But again, I don't know with the affinity. Let's do the last case here. This case of the bus strike. We spoke about industry practice. So Rav Moshe is a very interesting tshuva. It's not in front of you. But he talks about whether or not the person could back out, and I don't want to be part of the strike. I don't want to be involved in this. And there's a Gemara in Bava Basra which points out that you can actually have unions. The Gemara in Bava Basra Daf Tes, I'm trying to find where this exactly is, here we go, that says that a minhag can be established by a city. They can make their own minhagim up. And even a particular trade can make their own rules. And they could say that when we decide as a unit, as a union, to strike, and you refuse to, we could penalize it. You want to be part of our bus union? If you don't strike, we're going to penalize it, whatever the penalty is. And therefore, since they have that right, the din is that you are bound to the rules of the strike of the union. The only exception, the Gemara says, if let's say there's a Talmud Chacham who lives in the area, he's able to override the union agreements. Rav Moshe writes, nowadays we don't have such Talmud Chachamim, or Moshe himself said that in his day, how much more so now, and therefore that cannot be overridden at all, and whatever the union decides, and once part of that union, you must abide by those rules. Okay, we'll stop here. I'm not around next week, but in 2 weeks, we're going to continue the next topic, which is going to be about Gezeilas Akum and Gnevas Akum and Tolas Akum, those topics.